Cool. You ready? Should we start? Maybe. Me check my audio settings again. Microphone. Right. We're starting. Push the intro button. Welcome to the Rebel Alliance Briefing Room Podcast. We are here to podcast about anything and everything Star Wars with you. Please visit our website where you can play current and past episodes. That's https://rabrkylejohansson.us. That's RABR dot KAILEJOHANSEN dot US. On the left hand side is a navigation menu. You can use this to learn how to load the Rebel Alliance Briefing Room podcast on your Android or Apple phone and tablet. And we have direct links to our podcast on Apple and Google Podcasts. Please participate by connecting to our social media, answering questions of the week, or submitting feedback directly from the site. Again, all of these are available at the Rebel Alliance Briefing Room website at rabr.kailejohansen.us. And now, it's time to talk Star Wars. I am Kyle John Johansson, and this is Andrew Scott Sutton. Say hello.
Hello. Hello.
That again. Got a bunch of gray right there. Look at that.
You're old.
Shut up. All right. I'm going to share my screen too for a second. Share. What happened? Where's it going? Hello? That's the screen I want. Yes. Okay. Yeah. With sound. Where's my OK button? There it is.
Okay.
So I'm just sharing the screen because it's got this fancy poster on it of the thing. Because that's what we're going to talk about today. Today we're talking about Solo. It's a Star Wars story. It says down here, fine print, Star Wars story. We're going to review it and look at some Star Wars news. And, of course, do a full recap of everything that we saw. So... it just went off my screen. Sorry. So I wanted to kind of go over the general stuff here. Let me switch my screen back. Share screen. Advanced. Okay, so we're ready. All right, so this movie was originally first concept was started in 2015, this movie's actually got some controversy around it. So originally the directors were supposed to be let's see, Philip Lord and Christopher Miller, and there was some differences, creative differences between, I guess, Disney and the directors. And they eventually fired those two and brought in Ron Howard. And Ron Howard actually directed...
chuckled about that.
He directed this movie. And it was... I remember hearing about it on and everything in the news and stuff. Well, you know, they didn't talk about it in regular news, but, you know, just online articles and stuff I'd read before. So there was a lot of controversy around that, and, you know, fans were going crazy because they're like, you know, what's going on here? And they were excited that Ron Howard got added because he had done a couple of other movies. He had directed The Phantom Menace also. So,
wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. He's done a couple Star Wars movies, and that's kind of how... his daughter, Bryce Dallas Howard, got involved too because you know, she already had an in with him. He's like, okay, let's see what they say, and he invited her anyway. Through all that, and this movie's different because it's a Star Wars story, so it's not a part of the, you know, Skywalker saga, let's say. And I mean, there is no Skywalkers in this movie at all, as a matter of fact. And you know how normally the movies come up and they have the big scroll thing that tells you all the, you know, pre information that you need to know. And then it goes bang and it does Star Wars. This one doesn't do that either. It has text that comes up on the screen, but it doesn't, there's no scrolling or anything. It's just kind of giving you a brief thing about it.
But the
Let's
tag,
see.
but the tag, but the tagline is there for anyone.
Exactly. So this movie was released May 25th, 2018. It's a
Day
hundred
before
and
my
thirty
birthday.
day before your birthday. It's 135 minutes long, and it had a but original budget of $250 million. This takes place 10 years before New Hope, Battle of Yavin, and some of the future scenes that are in there happen all the way up to 13 years before the Battle of Yavin. And I think that's the first scene where we see Solo. Right away, we see him in a chase. He's ch being chased by somebody. I think that's around
Weird, yeah.
13 that happens. And of course, you know, we're gonna review Rogue One next week. That's the other Star Wars story, official Star Wars story that comes right after it. Even in the timeline. And this is the first time we officially see Han Solo with the Millennium Falcon also in this movie. This movie was screened at Cannes Film Festival on May 15th of 2018 and received general positive reviews. Blah blah blah. It was nominated for Best Visual Effects at the Academy Awards and so on and so on. Solo is the first and only live action cinematic release Star Wars film not involves space and the title card. Nor for I don't know what that means. I think they're saying the word space is not in the title card. Anyway, it does start out like all Star Wars movies do at the beginning when it starts showing the text. It says in a galaxy a long, far, far away, a long time ago. And then it goes into the text, and that text basically says it's a lawless time. Crime syndicates compete for resources, food, medicine, and hyperfuel. On the shipbuilding planet of Corellia, the foul lady Proxima forces runaways into a life of crime in exchange for shelter and protection. On these mean streets, a young man fights for survival but yearns to fly among the stars, is what the pretext says. And I'm going to leave it at that because we're going to go into news. We're not going to start the review yet. So let's push a news button. It's time for the news. So I have three news things today. The first one is there's a reason why Darth Vader never uses force lightning. Because, you know, we've seen quite a few of the Sith use lightning. Even Count Dooku used lightning, right? We saw him use it. I don't remember if we ever saw Darth Maul use it or not. I can't remember. Maybe he did. I don't know. But Darth Vader has never used Force lightning, ever. And of course, you know, we know from New Hope that he also dies, so he never uses it all the way through. Return of the Jedi.
and all that. Let's see. Yeah, because the first time we actually see Force Lightning is from Palpatine, in Return of the Jedi, when he's you know, lightning stuff at Luke and whatever to torture him. Officially in canon, we're going to, okay, blah, blah, blah. Here we go. Force Lightning is a dark side ability used to torture, disfigure, and even kill one's victims. Blue in color, Sith shoot Force Lightning from their hands by calling their hatred and aggressive feelings. However, while a deadly weapon is not unstoppable, Force Lightning can be deflected and absorbed by a lightsaber, and select Jedi have proved the ability to neutralize the technique through the power of the light side. So that's kind of a general description of what Force Lightning is. Scrolling through this here, it's a big old article. So the reasoning that they come up with is, in one of the actual comics that's in canon, there's a scene where in the comic where Darth Vader is meditating. You know, he tends to meditate quite often. We see him in his back to tank or whatever, and he's meditating. And during the meditation, his arms and legs are white, but the rest of him is like, you know, red hot, because he's channeling the dark side, so it makes him kind of glow reddish, you know, while he's meditating. But his arms and legs are white, and that is because they're mechanical. You know, he had his legs cut off, so he's got robotic legs and robotic arms, because he's had those cut off too. And they say that because Force Lightning, by definition, comes through the hands. And they're saying that the reason, and, you know, this hasn't been confirmed by, you know, George Lucas specifically, but they're saying the reason is because Darth Vader doesn't have any real hands. And he has to have human hands but real hands for Force Lightning to come out. But it says specifically, Sith channeled Force Lightning using their hands, seemingly because Darth Vader no longer has hands and they're mechanical. He can't channel the dark side of the Force through them, meaning that he can't use Force Lightning, you know, because of that. And we also see, you know, Darth Vader has always been shown as someone who, you know, is in tune with the dark side, but he also sees glimpses of the light side too, because he's conflicted, right? He never fully commits himself to the dark side all the way. And that's part of it too. They think that the little bit of light side that he's got might neutralize his ability as well. So that's the general gist of that article is, you know, we get a good definition of what Force Lightning is, but we also find out that he can't do it because he doesn't have real hands and partial arms. Next article, I'm going to share my screen again. Let me get there. Yes. And you can see my screen with this symbol on it. Huh? Is that true, Scott?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, good. So the next one is kind of a little game we're going to play. So the title is, can you recognize all of these 11 Star Wars symbols or insignias? You know, kind of like what I have behind me. I've got the, you know, Fett, and I've got whatchamacallit over there, the Jedi symbol. So this is the first one is this symbol. Can you see it well enough, Scott, to even recognize what it is? That one should be an easy one, right? That's
George Lucas.
This one?
Yeah.
Yeah. No. What?
Oops.
This is the symbol. No, he does, but that's not it. And I've got the symbol up here. I don't know if you can see that, but it's cut off a little bit, I guess. But I got it right up there on my wall. Here's the next one. What does that one look like? You know what? I'm gonna give you the answers here in just a bit. I just want you to kind of look and guess. And I've got it over there. All right. Next one. This is a special one, which might be difficult. So this symbol is called the Yoda symbol. We'll talk about it here in just more in a bit, but it's basically Yoda's signature with a circle and stuff. If you pay attention in some of the movies, I think it's the prequels. We go into Yoda's quarters at one point when he talks to Anakin or whatever. You can see the symbol in his quarters. Here's another one. This red one. What do you think that red one is? I've got it somewhere here too. Nope, that's not it. But that's what it stands for. This one here. This one's different. I don't. This is one that we wouldn't probably recognize because it's old. Let's say. We've seen this before. You know what that is, right?
Yeah.
I've got it way up there. That's the Empire of some sort. This is something to do with the Republic, I think. I can't remember exactly which that silver one is. Here's another one. So remember, we went through the Empire, we went through the Galactic Empire, and then we went to what's the other one? The First Order. So I think this, that's the first generation that we saw in like A New Hope, I believe, maybe. And then they reformed again, and it was this symbol. And then this one is different, and I can't remember what this one actually is right now. And then this is the First Order one, and this is one we only saw in the final three movies. After they defeated Palpatine and stuff, we kind of saw this a little bit. So the first one, if you remember, that's the one that stands for the Rebel Alliance. It was found on like uniforms and helmets and stuff like that, and some of the starfighters had it on there. So that one is, like I said, Rebel Alliance. The next one here stands for the Jedi Order. This is the insignia you see all over the place. In the Jedi temples and on Coruscant and stuff. Again, here's the Yoda crest. It says here that if you look really well, it's seen in the Attack of the Clones movie. This one here, this red one, is the Sith symbol. It's exact opposite of supposedly of the Jedi Order, which I don't see that, but whatever. This one here is the Old Republic. And the Old Republic is before the prequels, before Phantom Menace. So that's why we don't really recognize it. It's way back when the Jedi and the Sith were having a great war and stuff like that. So there's this one's the Galactic Republic, like we kind of said. The Republic. And then this silver one, it stands for the Galactic Senate, which that's why we don't really recognize it, because I don't know if I've ever seen that symbol before today. And this one is the Galactic Empire, which Galactic Republic, Galactic Empire, they're somewhat similar, but not really. This one stands for the Separatists, that group that they started to get the big war for the Clone Wars. That's their symbol. And I don't know if I've ever seen that symbol either in Star Wars. It's probably there, but I don't know if I've ever seen it. Then, of course, we got the First Order. That's the one that Kylo Ren likes.
Yeah.
And then this last one is, it's got the same symbol for the resistance, but it's got these stars around it and a gold ring around the outside of it. And that stands for the New Republic. So when they finally defeat Palpatine, the New Republic is what is formed, you know, from his clone or whatever that's he's got tethered to whatever to keep alive. This is the Republic that comes out of defeating him. And I think I read here that there's not a huge number of planets in the beginning when they first form it. I think it says there's like 10 or so different planets that join at the start. And I maybe 12 or whatever. I think that's what these stars represent, is the original founders of the New Republic. So those are different planets or systems, you know, like, you know, some systems like our system, you know, the solar system that we're in has several planets, you know, so they could all be designated by one star. And I'm going to stop sharing again. The final article that we have, just a second. The final article we have today is it's called What does Ahsoka's white lightsaber really mean in Star Wars? I kind of wanted to bring this one up because in the past we talked about different lightsabers and stuff like that, and how lightsabers were, you know, created, and you know, how the Sith do their lightsabers and all that stuff. There's a story behind, if you remember, when Ahsoka appeared in The Mandalorian, her lightsabers, her blades were actually white. And that's because, according to this, and it's documented somewhere in a book, I think it is, that she...
she's not on the dark side or on the Jedi. She's pure.
Not exactly. I mean, what you're saying is almost right, but not exactly. So, what happens is in this one book that I'm referring to, and I think it might have started happening in Rebels. She loses her lightsabers in a battle. She has like some borrowed, she has some lightsabers that she's borrowed basically that she's using. And she ends up in a battle in this book with the fifth brother Inquisitor. And she ends up defeating the fifth brother. He's got two lightsabers, you know, how they have the lightsabers put together, and then they can spin it and, you know, do whatever that rotating thing is. So he has two lightsabers, and she prefers two lightsabers. So she defeats him, and then she does the opposite of bleeding. She converts the crystals back to the light side. And when you do that, when you first convert them, the crystals turn bright white. So she chose not to, you know, meditate and make it a different color. She chose to use the pure color of the bright white that happens after it's been unbled, let's say. And it says basically white lightsabers are incredibly rare. The practice of creating white blades is also called steeping, is what they do when they convert the crystals into from the Sith side, or unbleed them, and they call it steeping. And Ahsoka, yeah. So, you know, like you said, and it helps her because, kind of like you said, she doesn't necessarily identify as a Jedi anymore, right? She kind of stopped doing that not too long after Order 66, right? We see more of it in Rebels and such, but and she finally declares it, I think, at the end of the Rebels series, right? Or was that Clone Wars? I can't remember which one it was. That last season of Clone Wars, maybe. Yeah, so that's generally why they're white, is because she unbled the crystals, and when that happens, they turn crystal white, and you have to do more to them to, you know, like get a yellow or a blue or whatever like that. And she, because she doesn't identify as a Jedi anymore, she doesn't really want a Jedi colored lightsaber. So that's that. Let's end the news here.
The news.
All right. Any opinions on that, Scott?
I guess I scanned over the article.
No, I mean, you're partially right. They're white because she doesn't really identify as a Jedi anymore, right? She doesn't want to be considered a Jedi, but she's not a Sith either. So it's a neutral color. Let's run the spoiler alert, and then we can get into sure, wake up.
Spoiler alert. Danger. You're about to be spoiled. This is your spoiler alert. We're about to talk candidly and explicitly about some TV shows or movies. If you have not watched them, please fast forward to the appropriate section. You will not be warned again, because you will be spoiled.
Spoiled. All right, now that we're awake, let's get going here. So I've got mine queued up. Or you got yours queued up? All right, so at the beginning we have the text before, and then we get a scene where Han Solo is jump-starting a speeder, right? And he's running from...
I believe Star the correct term is hot wiring.
Hot wiring. Whatever. Jump-starting, hot wiring. He's running from somebody who's chasing him.
Jump-starting is legal. Hot wiring, stealing, is not.
Oh, jump-start is what you do with jumper cables, right?
Yeah.
yeah, so he's...
I
don't want to know about that. So he's being chased down the streets of Corellia, escaping in this speeder, which the chase isn't very much. He just kind of outruns them before they can find him.
Mm-hmm.
And he returns to his safe haven lair with Lady Proxima, right? And we see, this is the first time we see Kira. He comes in and sees her on the way in. And, we see some of the other residents of the place talking about things that they stole and they did. He sees Kira and he tells her the story, because when they kiss, she notices that he's kind of bruised up a little bit because he's been beaten in a fight. And he tells the exchange that, you know, it was all stolen and he lost the money, but he was able to steal a speeder. He calls it Boost a Steeder, and he's got a vial of coaxium, refined coaxium, which is the stable form of coaxium. When it's refined, you don't have to worry about heat and stuff like that when it's been refined. which we'll find more about later in the movie. Let's see. This is a slow scene. And eventually he gets dragged in, and Lady Proxima comes out of the water. And I don't know. I think Lady Proxima is kind of a worm type of creature. What do you think that is, Scott? Is that some sort of worm creature? I'm not that far yet. All right, she comes out of the water. She's got a big head. Looks like she's wearing jewelry and clothing, too. And she's not very happy that he doesn't have the money or the coaxium. And he says something about a valuable lesson, right? We don't trust them anymore. That's our lesson. Yeah, and then, you know, she has one of her guards, you know, beat up on him a little bit to punish him. You know, in front of everybody, of course, which is, you know.
Have to have that control.
Got to keep those people in line, right? Show everybody that this is what happened. Have that control. And he stands up and says, nobody's going to hit me again. And he gets threatened with a blaster thing. And we get Lady Proxima telling us how Kira was pulled out of a silo that she lived in. That was a really bad situation. And he then all of a sudden Solo picks up a rock and calls it a thermal detonator. And the funny part is Lady Proxima says, that's not a thermal detonator, that's a rock. And he says, no, it isn't. And Kira questions his motives. He says, no, I'm going to do this. And he throws the rock at a glass window, which causes the sunlight to come in. And apparently Lady Proxima and the guards and such have a, a problem with the sun. The sun burns them, right? Instantly, it looks like. And she gets burned pretty bad and goes back under the water. And they run out and eventually escape in this speeder that he's already stolen. And, you know, they're cheering and excited. And, you know, they can use the coaxium to get off the planet and leave. Right? They're going to the spaceport. And suddenly... The cruiser or whatever that's chasing them, you know, with the guards and the hounds and stuff, come up behind them. Yeah, and big, huge thing, right?
Yeah.
And it's obviously got more power because it's just, you know, not even struggling to keep up with them. And they clash a little bit, you know, they're pushing him and banging him around and they damaged the speeder a little bit and trick them by doing a little spin and sneaking off through the security gates into the spaceport. And there's a little funny part where the big cruiser hits the droid that's saying you can't go in there and it pops his head off, right? That's pretty funny.
It even had something to say after its head came off.
Yeah, it started talking after the head came off. That was pretty funny. Kind of like what we saw with C-3PO, you know, when he got his head shut off and put onto a droid, a clanker droid. So the chase continues on through there and eventually attracts a Imperial trooper, you know, police. Tries to pull him over, And they end up having the Imperial guy crash somehow into something. You know, they do a tricky move and he doesn't move fast enough and crashes. And they finally are gaining some ground on the big cruiser because there's so much traffic and their path is getting smaller. And all of a sudden he's like, trust me, we're gonna get away from them. And he turns the speeder sideways and goes down a really small alleyway. And eventually the speeder crawls to a stop right before they exit the little alleyway, right?
Yep.
They're stuck in there, and they climb out and run towards the spaceport with the guards and the dogs following. And on foot, they make it in there unseen. Yeah, there's a little shooting going on. They make it into the port, and you hear background noises. You know, you need your chip ID. All droids must be registered. Yeah, droids must be registered. You know, do not resist, stuff like that. And we see some troopers having a fight with someone. You know, maybe they don't have their card. We don't really know. And they fight with them, and that's a distraction that allows Solo and Kira to get in line to enter the spaceport. Because right now they're going through the gates, basically, to get on the spaceport. They're still... And it's apparently sovereign land or something on the other side. So the authorities on this side can't go to the other side, basically. So they discuss how they're going to use the coaxium to get off the planet. Yeah, let's see what else. They finally make it up to the counter. And there's a woman guard there. She asks for the ID and all that stuff, and they don't have it. But we have this hyperfuel that we want to trade. It's easily worth 500, 600 credits. And she looks around like she, I don't know. I don't know if she trusts him or she's gonna trap him or whatever. And Kira doesn't want to give it to her because she wants assurances that they're not going to get tricked. And, you know, they finally get to a point where, you know, the guards are coming up close on them, so they got to put it in. And she opens the gate as soon as they put the coaxium in the tray, and they run for it, but Kira doesn't make it. She gets pulled back in by the guards, right? And, of course, our lady friend that was at the gate or at the counter says, calls an alert saying that there's been a security breach.
Yeah.
And the Imperial troopers and Proxima's guards run off with Kira. And Han Solo is, of course, yelling for her, no, Kira, Kira, no, and I'll come back. I love you. And he decides to run to get away from the gate and, you know, kind of steals a jacket and a hat to disguise himself. And, of course, the Imperials are on the other side looking for him or somebody, and he ends up hiding behind a bunch of junk, piles of junk and boxes and crates and stuff, right? And he finally he sees a message thing on the wall talking about join the Empire, join up and we'll send you out and you can fly on Star Cruisers and be in space and you know, we're good.
It's their house.
Yeah, and he decides that he's gonna sign up to be a pilot. And he gets up to the counter and, you know, they're talking or whatever. And he's like, I'm the best pilot in the galaxy, blah, blah, blah. And the guy is punching in the information about him. And he says, what's your name? He says, Han. And he says, Han, what? Who are your people? And he's like, I don't have people. It's just me. I'm alone. And the guy says, Han Solo. We'll just call you Solo. Oh, it's been approved. You can go through. So he gets approved, and they'll have him flying in no time. And we cut to a scene that says 3 years later, and there's a big battle where there's, you know, big weapons and the AT crawlers are walking around. And
it's all muddy.
It's all muddy, yeah.
All dirty.
Mud's yucky, right? So he's avoiding getting shot in this battle. He's actually running the opposite direction. He's supposed to be running into a trench. And, you know, of course, there's somebody screaming that they got shot or somebody's legs are shot off. And we see a guy in a distance doing, you know, shooting at people. And he's twirling his guns and stuff. And it's Woody Harrelson. Oh, I mean, Beckett. And he overhears some of Beckett's crew talking about the... Yeah. Some of his crew talking about a job, and he mentions the AT crawler that's flying over is what they need to steal. And in the meantime, the major gets blown up, and Solo comes up and notices that Beckett's a captain and says, you're in charge now. And eventually Beckett starts giving orders to people.
He tries to get rid of them.
Yeah, shut up and do what your captain tells you. Let's go.
Let's go. Let's go this way. We're going this way.
Right. Pew, 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 pew. And then, you know, they clear after the battle's over or something. Down in a trench, and everybody's like, Captain. Hey, Captain. Captain. Captain.
Captain, not Captain.
Like a Captain Morgan commercial, right?
Yeah. take a shot.
And Solo comes up upon Beckett again and tells Beckett tells him to get as far away as possible, get away from everything. And he asks what company they're from, and they say, none of your business company.
NYB.
Yeah.
No business.
And Solo notices one of the guys pulls up his pants with a second set of hands.
I love that character.
Yeah, that's a good character. And then there's a lieutenant that's out there giving orders and telling him to go take the next hill and stuff. And Solo is questioning the commands and says, what's our objective? You know, what are we doing? We're the invaders, not them. You know, stuff like that. Yeah. And then when they start moving out, he goes the opposite direction again. Mostly towards the those AT speeders that he knows that Beckett's going to take off, and he comes up behind Beckett and says, what are we looking at? Beckett's like, what the hell are you doing here? Sticking your nose in stuff. And he kind of calls out Beckett saying, you know, you're wearing a uniform full of holes, so it must have come from a dead man. You're not really an Imperial Army, are you? He's using it to blackmail him so he can get in on the job, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's wise like that. Right. He talks about how he can fly, and he's a driver, flyer. He can do that. And the guy with two hands says, "Hey, I'm the pilot here. That's what my job is." And they ask him why he got kicked out of Imperial Flying School, and he says he had a mind of his own. He didn't agree with them, and they kicked him out. They tell him that he tells him he has to get back to Corellia. And then he threatens him again by saying he's going to tell the lieutenant on him. And that's when Beckett calls the lieutenant over.
Yeah, that was funny.
We've got a deserter here. Don't trust him. Don't listen to anything he says. He's a liar. They take him off and they say, "Feed him to the beast." And they're like, "What beast?
Feed him to the beast.
What? Who? What's this beast?"
A beast.
And they chain him up to a chain and throw him down in this. I don't know. I guess it's a sewer pit kind of thing to me, but it's even more muddy, right? Yeah. It's just slop muddy. Which, like I said, I think it's a sewer pit. He's down there not very long, and something starts pulling on his chain that's attached to his leg, right? And growling, and we see eventually a big, muddy, hairy monster come out growling at him. And, you know, they said before that the monster hasn't been fed for 3 days.
Oh, that's nice.
He comes in with a chain and rawr, right at Han Solo.
Just rolling on the ground.
Tells him to take it easy and throws a handful of mud in his face, in the beast's face. And they start fighting, and of course, the beast is stronger than him. He's throwing him all over the place and pounding him against poles and posts and walls and lifting him above his head. And Solo notices that the one of the support beams is kind of loose.
Yeah.
And, you know, he says he finally gets the beast attention by talking in Wookiee-ese.
Hey, yo, man, you want Bud Light?
And he starts talking to him and telling him, "Hey, I've got a plan to get out. We can get out together." And he says, "Hey, you see that post? It's kind of moving and wiggling. If we break that out, it's gonna the ceiling's gonna fall down."
Huh?
"So we're going to pretend that we're fighting and you're going to hit this post as much as possible." And the beast agrees and begins pounding on the pipe. The guys above mentioned, "Hey, he's not going to last 10 more minutes.
Hey, slow down. Kill him slowly."
"Yeah, kill him slowly. You're going too fast." And that's when Han kind of threatens him a little bit and calls him a dirty name or whatever. And the Wookiee attacks him and hits the pole and knocks it down. The guards fall in the pit. And the beast throws him out of the pit and they start running opposite directions. And we see Solo looks and sees there's an AT ship flying above him. Says, "Wait, that's where I need to go." Says, "Listen to me. I have some friends that are going to get us out of here. You have to go follow me instead of going the direction you're going. You go the other way or you're not going to live." Tucks them into it, and they start heading towards the you know, the landing area for these AT cruiser crawler things, ships.
Yep.
And we see Beckett and his crew getting about aboard one of them and starting to take off, right?
Yeah, they're launching.
And then Han and the Beast show up. And they're like, hey, wait for us, wait for us. And they, you know, the crew talks about it and, you know, hey, this guy's got balls and he's growing on me. And Beckett's...
He has a Wookiee.
Beckett realizes he's got a Wookiee and he's like, oh, we need some strength. It's probably a good idea then. So the ship comes back down and they get on board. And, you know, they take off. And I think the next scene we see is all them taking a shower.
Yeah. That's pretty funny.
Yeah. So they're taking off. And then we see Solo's in the shower getting, you know, all the mud and stuff off. And the Beast walks in, the Wookiee.
Oh.
And he's like, hey, couldn't we done this separately? Mm-hmm. And the Wookiee's like, I'm not waiting any longer. And after they've been cleaned up, they're you know, talking to each other. And he's like, hey, don't you feel better? And he thanks him for getting him out of the pit and to the ship.
That's a tender moment. Just a tender moment with Chewbacca.
Yeah. And he, Chewbacca's basically saying to him that they only took you because they want my strength. And Solo says back and says, no, they took you because they wanted me. And he asks him eventually what he should call him. And he says his name's Chewbacca, of course. And Han says, I'm not going to call you that. I'm going to have to call you something shorter than that. That's too much. And eventually we get to an area where there's a bunch of mountains with snow on them. And they're scouting out a rail car system that's hauling coaxium is what they say. And they're talking about how they need to, you know, what defenses it has and how they need to disable it and get the cargo off the tracks. And they bring up Infus Nest, right? Who's Infus Nest? Oh, they're a bunch of marauders. They don't know anything about this. My source is the first source. It's not, this isn't something that somebody knew about.
Nope.
And we go around to a campfire that they're sitting around, you know, probably after dinner. They're just sitting around talking or whatever. And they're, you know, kind of preparing their weapons and talking and, you know, relaxing. And a couple jokes get thrown. And Beckett's convincing them that
kissy face.
Yeah. Beckett is talking about the Valacor and, you know, learning to play and retire after this job, which if they did get this job off, they would make a lot of money, because it's, we'll see here in a little bit, but it's a lot of coaxium that they're trying to steal. And they start mentioning that Han is doing the job because he wants to get back to Corellia for a girl. And, you know, teasing him about it, and he tells a story about the girl and that He escaped and she didn't. He's telling the story still. And the forehand guy says he doesn't want to be tied down by anybody. And then we get kissy kissy with Beckett and his girl. And he asks Chewbacca what he's going to do with his share of the money.
I'm going to become a farmer. How gross that.
He talks about how the Wookiees were enslaved and that he is searching for his family. He says he doesn't know the difference. He can't tell the difference between the word tribe and family from what Chewbacca said. And Beckett says, the only thing you need to know is what I tell you to know, tell you to do. And if you do that, then you'll have more than enough money to buy your own ship. And he hands him a gun to use, which ends up being the standard pistol type of blaster that Han Solo uses throughout the other movies. And then they're aboard the AT cruiser again, hovering over the train. And, they're jumping down onto the train so they can secure the cables and, fight off the guards, whatever. And the girl, Val, is going to by the security tower so she can disable it. And again, they're attaching the clamps to the thing, and they need to get into the ship so they can confirm it's the right car, or the train, I mean. And I see the coaxial, and there's like hundreds and hundreds of vials of coaxium in these crates. Yeah. And they begin to hook the AT flyer up to the cables that they hooked on. And just then, the guards start noticing they're there and shooting at them. Pew, 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 pew. There's a couple close calls with them coming up, going off the side of the train. And one of them is with Chewie. He almost gets hit by a rock, and then Solo's the same thing, and they save each other both times, you know, building that camaraderie between Chewie and Han Solo. Right? Right. And we get to a point where they've secured the cruiser to the train, and they're just trying to get rid of the guards now, and they're shooting at them and shooting at them and attacking them and shooting them.
Yeah.
And Chewie disconnects one of the cars at the disconnects all the cars that the guards were on, so they're left behind. And now they've got the rest of the train with their one at the end that they need to get the coaxium from. We see Val setting some charges for the bridge because they're going to blow the bridge so that the car is attached to them, but the rest of the train falls off. Obviously, somebody's got to disconnect the car from the train, too. And suddenly, a bunch of marauders show up. Val warns them that they're here, And this is when Beckett says, "Oh, it's Impus Nest." And they start shooting pew 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 at him. There's a big battle in there. They're falling off the sides again, and Impus Nest is trying to take over the AT cruiser and cutting the cords and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Beckett shoots down one of the speeders bikes or whatever they're riding on. And someone gets aboard of the AT and is shooting at the Ardenian, and he gets shot in the shoulder pretty bad. And they can see that he's not able to fly the AT flyer anymore. So Solo tells Chewie that he's going to have to uncouple the car itself. Well, he goes on there and flies the AT flyer himself. And because the Ardenian can't fly very well, they trip one of the sensors, and the Viper droids start coming out. And we see, the Ardenian, he's hit really bad in the shoulder. He's got severe burns and looks like he's got a hole all the way through his shoulder. And Han finally gets up there. He'll
put his finger in it and make him tell something.
And Han finally gets control of the cruiser. Impus Nest is, of course, still attacking, and they fight with Beckett a little bit. Pew, 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 pew. And this Impus Nest person has a blade that's got like laser things on the side of it that can slice mm-hmm. through things. And they use it to slice through the cables and get at least a couple of the cables cut. And we see Ardenian again on the ship, and he basically dies right there, right? Well, it looks like they lost two of the cables on the ship. Well, that's right. It's never good to die alone. And the Viper droids, Val's shooting at him and trying to distract him, and they're hitting her pretty hard. Trains, of course, still going on, moving along, blah, blah, blah. And Impus Nest is still attacking. Val's pinned down, and they need to blow the bridge soon.
This first plane was set it for a certain time and pick it up and pick her up so she would do what she's going to do.
Yeah, she's not going to be able to make it. She's pinned in, so she's going to be trapped on there. So she's going to have to and she sets off the detonator. And it blows up while she's on the bridge. And, of course, Beckett's like, "No, Val, no." And Impus Nest finally gets off the train because they realize it's going to go over the tracks. And they attach themselves to a couple of the cables. So they've got cables, and Impus Nest has got cables connected to it. And they both pull off, and Solo realizes he can't control it because they've got too many cables attached. The other Impus Nest has got too many cables attached. And he says, it's too heavy for them to carry by themselves, so I'm going to disconnect. And of course, Beckett says, no, we're going to lose it then. No. And so he thinks he's going to run into a mountain. So he eventually releases it and lets Infus Nest have it. And they can't control it and run right into the rock face of the crate falls off, and they run because they know it's going to explode. Yeah. It explodes and basically blows up 3/4 of the mountain, right? Mountain falls down and crumbles, and
yeah, big explosion.
Pretty huge explosion. That's how you get rid of a mountain, I guess, huh? Yeah. And they eventually get landed, and Beckett's burying the two Val and the Ardenian guy, and Solo comes up behind him, and Beckett punches him right away. Beesh! To the ground. You don't listen, you can't follow orders. We weren't stealing for ourselves. We owe money to people, and they're not going to be happy. Crimson Dawn? Who's that?
What'd you do to me? What'd you do to us?
They're going to kill us.
He explains
to him that the Crimson Dawn doesn't send out a team. They don't give up. They find you and kill you. And they talk about a way to make it up to Dryden Voss. And Solo says, well, we need to find another job then and get the coaxium for him anyway. He tells him how he's in this for good if he goes to see the boss, Dryden Voss.
Yeah. You don't want no part of it. Walk with me right now.
Yep, you can still walk away.
But I'm
and he consults with Chewie, and they decide that they're gonna risk it.
Yeah.
We get a. And it's never a problem finding Dryden Voss because he's always there.
They're having a party, though. I want to go to that party.
I do, too. Yeah, so they're on this big, I don't know, it's a vertical ship instead of a horizontal ship.
It's off of Skinny.
And it ends up landing at a docking spot, and they get on the ship on an elevator type of thing and go up to this party that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. They have to check their guns first.
All right. Yeah. I checked. It's loaded.
Yep. And we've got the party with some weird people singing. Some guy in a bottle with water singing and a lady singing. And apparently they've got these microphones attached to their faces or their whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Big party. Dancing and drinking and weird creatures talking to other people. And
wondering what's
Beckett, going on. Beckett says he's wanting to speak to Dryden, and One of the assistants says he's just finishing up with the regional governor. And we see Dryden basically kill that regional governor with these sword things that have, or these knife things that have laser blades. And he rejoins the party. This is where Beckett tells him that these people aren't your friends. Don't talk to anybody. Don't look at anybody. Just keep your eyes down and
mind your own business.
Yeah, mind your own business. None of these people are people you want to be involved with. And of course, he walks off. And Chewie asks, he says, I'm going to go get some food. Yep. Singer's done. And he was walking around, and Kira comes up and says, hey. He's like, oh, I just saw a ghost. He's surprised. And they hug and, you know, embrace. And he says, what are you doing here? And she says, I work. He says, I work here. She says, well, he says, what are you doing here? And I said, well, I've got business here. Got this job thing going on. Now he doesn't have to find her because she's right in front of him. She's glad that he got out.
She's always.
And he asks how she got out. And he's like, she's like, I never got out. I didn't.
I graduated to Crimson. She was sold.
You see a tattoo on her, or a branding on her arm that's the Crimson Dawn branding. While she gets a drink for him and her and Solo, and Chewbacca's back there drinking and eating and enjoying himself. She asks him about the ship that he supposedly was going to get. And he's like, well, that's why I'm here. I'm getting paid so I can buy that ship.
Beckett comes back around. Right.
Yeah, they're talking about this big deal and this big money that he's going to get. And Beckett comes around and says, hey, I told you not to talk to anybody.
Hey, don't worry about it.
You two work together. What? And then we see Dryden. Dryden comes up and says, oh, I see you, Beckett. How are you doing? Are you fine? Did you get hurt? And he apologizes about Val, who got killed. And Beckett introduces him to Han Solo and Chewbacca. And he says, I see you've already met my top lieutenant. We see the ring on Dryden Voss's hand that has the same symbol that she's got either tattooed or scarred into her, branded into her arm. And they go to talk privately about the deal that they're supposed to be doing. They talk about how there was complications and problems, and you know they didn't get the coaxium because Infant's Nest was there, and who gave them that information? And Dryden's like, I don't care about your problems. And Kira comes in and says the same thing. They're not interested in why. They want to know how they're going to pay back.
We'll pay them back.
There's no making it right. You know who I answer to, and you know what they'll expect. There will be consequences. Consequences. I need you to give me a reason not to kill you.
Oh.
How are you going to make it up? We're going to steal it from somewhere else. From where? Maybe Mercy Island or Scarif.
Then we're just going to put it in the bag.
And Han comes up with an idea to steal unrefined coaxium. And that's when Kira says that the only known source of unrefined is on Kessel and the spice mines, controlled by the Pikes. And Dryden's like, well, we don't want to jeopardize our relationship with the Pikes. We're not going to go do that. And that's where Han says, well, what, we don't have those connections to the Pikes. We can do it, and they won't even know that we're affiliated with you, Dryden Voss. And Dryden's like, oh, hey, maybe that's a good idea. And they talk about how Ralk coaxium destabilizes quickly because of heat, right? It has to be kept cold or it will destabilize and explode on its own. And they discuss where that Savarine is the place that they're talking about. And they can refine it at Savarine, which is not far away, but it's far enough away that if they don't get there in a hurry, it'll destabilize and explode before they get there. And that's when Han's like, yeah, we can do it. Just let us take care of this. We'll take care of it for you. We'll do it. And Dryden's impressed with his confidence, let's say. And he assigns Kira to watch over them and get the coaxium this time. Because he doesn't want any mistakes, right?
Yeah.
And they're all going to meet up at Savarine.
All these dusty places they have to go to.
Yeah. If you do fail me again, we'll be out of options. And as they leave, Kira asks what they need, and they say they need a ship of some sort and some supplies. And Beckett says he can take care of the weapons and supplies, but Kira needs to get him a ship. So she starts talking about this guy that she knows that can get him a ship. And they end up going into a place here that's got these big, looks like horns from a Mandalorian animal thing, whatever that thing's called. I forget what it's called now. The mandibles and all that stuff. It's got the big things there at the entrance, and it's an underground club of some sort. We see some droids doing some fighting. There's a illegal fighting of droids going on there.
Yeah, that it's MMA for droids.
Exactly, and they're attacking each other and destroying their own circuits and stuff like that. And we come up on a card game, and the guy she's been describing is the one that's at the card table, and He's wearing a yellow shirt with a scarf and all that stuff, all charismatic. And that guy is named what? Thank you, Lando Calrissian. And we see,
is he like a junior or something?
I don't know. I don't think so. That's only been Calrissian as far as I know.
This naughty one.
Lando Calrissian. And he just wins a hand, and Solo comes in and says, hey, can I play? I have a... And he talks about how he's only played a few times, and...
What game is this? Yeah, sorry.
Sadek? No, hands... Or, Lido says Sabak. And he calls him... He tells him his name's Han Solo, and he calls him Han, and he says, no, it's Han. No, it's Han, not Han. And Lando's talking about his different things he's won, like a subtropical moon and a ship and... Han talks about how he's flying a VCX-100.
Yeah.
Of course he's lying.
Of course he is.
And Han wins the first hand. Beginner's luck. He's got some sort of creature sitting next to him that's got like six sets of eyes.
Keep your eye on his own cards.
Eventually he says that, but Han keeps winning and, you know, back and forth. And, you know, some of the people at the table are walking away because they're tired of losing money. And again, we see the guy with the eyes and he's like, keep your eyes on your own cards, buddy.
Yeah.
All of them. And the guy accidentally shows him Han's cards. And he says, keep your eyes on all of them. And they're playing and playing. One of the creatures is so nervous he puts his fingers in his mouth and chews off all his nails.
Nails and they go everywhere.
Yeah. And the stakes get high. They're betting like 2,000. And Han's like, I'll raise you this much. And he throws in his whole entire pile, goes all in.
Yeah.
And Lando goes, whoa, whoa, whoa now, Han.
Mess with Lando.
I like this kid. He's calling him.
He's pretty slick.
And he says, what are you going to call with, your scarf? And then Lando says, no, I'll put it in my ship.
He's such a cheater, though.
Yeah, and that's where we see that Han's got a really good hand. And it's, you know, obviously he's going to win. And suddenly Lando comes with a better hand, right?
Yeah. It's up to sleeve shit.
Exactly. But we don't see that right away. We don't know that for sure.
No.
But we'll see it here in just a moment where they're talking and he sees the little thing for this card of the sleeve. There we go. We see more of the droids fighting. And it looks like one of the droids defeats. And this is the first time we see L3.
Yeah.
And Lando comes back and says, yoo-hoo, where's my VCX-100? And Han's like, well, I don't have it here right now.
It's in the shop. Right now.
Exactly. And Kira's talking to him, and they're going to start talking business. Because he's worried, you know, he starts out, he's worried, you know, I'm square with you guys, right? I know I'm square. And, you know, this is where he tells Solo to back off because, you know, adults are talking, right? And once he understands that he's square with Dryden Voss, he asks what she wants, and she says, we need a ship. We're going to do the Kessel Run. And Beckett comes in and starts offering part of the cut on the job.
Part of and the cut. Sorry, big cut.
he offers him 25%. And Lando negotiates 40%. Becca says 25%. And agrees with 25%. And then we hear L3 in the background talking about exploiting droids for great entertainment. And Lando says it's his first mate.
She's pretty wicked.
She's telling the droids inside the cage they shouldn't be doing this. It's against their programming. And
against their program.
She starts a fight with one of the human people that are managing the droids and tells her to get out of there. Lando comes up and says, L3, let go of the man's face. And she doesn't agree with them going to Kessel with these guys. And this is where Han says, if she doesn't want to fly, I'll fly.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have a little problem with L3 still. And Lando explains that the reason they need her is because she has the best navigational database in the galaxy in her head.
Sure.
And Lando says he keeps his ship locked up. And they come up on a basically an impound lot that's all locked up. And Lando says, basically, you need to help me get it free. Help me get it out.
But, I don't want to.
L3 starts cutting the gate. Says, stop looking at me. I can't perform when you're looking at me. They talk about the ship being a piece of junk, and Orlando leads them to his ship, and it's, you know, the Millennium Falcon. Says, I call it the Millennium Falcon. Him and Chewbacca start surveying the ship from the outside, and Hans recognizes it and says, looks like you've had a few things done.
Yeah, talking about all the storage stuff.
Lando says he added a wet bar, and Beckett recognizes immediately the ship's been impounded. It's got a restraining bolt on it, restraining boot on it. And he asks Beckett to take it off. And Beckett says, well, we can do that, but we're going to have to take 5% off your cut. And this is where Lando says he doesn't like it, he doesn't agree with it, but he accepts it. And Beckett asks Chewie to take off the landing restraint. And we see Infus Nest talk about how they put a tracking device on the ship, and they're tracking They're going to track them to wherever they're going. And they take off and leave. We're now inside the Millennium Falcon, and Han's in the cockpit looking out at the sky and mentions to Lando that his father used to build these ships on Corellia before he's laid off, right? And they talk about how, you know, if he was close with his old man, and none of them were close, but Lando says he was extremely close with his mother, which makes you wonder, right?
Yeah.
And L3 comes in and says, "Get out of my seat. I'm the co-pilot." "My circuits are sticking. We're going to have to do that thing again."
Yep.
"What thing is that? I don't know."
All the fun stuff.
And they're plotting a course, is ready, and they're ready to go to hyperspace. And they talk about how they can't fly directly to Kessel because you've got to go through the Maelstrom, and there's a specific route you have to take to get there. And they buckle in and go into hyperspace. Pew! Travel, travel, travel. Stars are streaming by.
That's his first time in hyperspace.
Yep. And he's enjoying it and taking it in, and we see Beckett and Chewbacca playing chess with the animated characters.
The enemy.
And Beckett's beating the crap out of him in chess, and Chewie's not happy about it. He tries to wipe off the animated characters off the chessboard. So Chewie's learning to play chess from Beckett. He's teaching him tricks. And Solo starts walking around the ship and looking at things and notices Kira's in Lando's area trying on capes. And they comment on how many capes there are there, and there's too many capes.
That's true. Yeah, it was like, hold on.
That's a lot of capes.
Fashionista.
Exactly. And they start talking about, their relationship and the plan, and flirting with each other, chuckle, chuckle. Lovey-dovey eyes kissy, at each
kissy,
other.
Kissy.
Yep. And they get ready to kiss. They get ready to kiss. They don't kiss this time, do they?
Yeah.
And Beckett comes up behind him. Oh, that's right. They are kissing. Yeah. Here,
am I interrupting here something?
Am I interrupting something?
They do the whole deep throat shit. Yeah.
Tongue and all. Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, maybe not. She puts his arm around him. Yep, there it is.
There's the tongue. Now the heads get tilted.
Am I interrupting something? We need to get to planning this job here. Stop playing around. Chewbacca's still looking at the chessboard, trying to figure out what he did wrong. Mm-hmm. Beckett's warning him about getting involved with Kira. And they start going over the plan, right?
Yeah, get this stuff down, people. Come on.
He says, "Do you want to know how I survived as long as I have? I assume that everyone's going to betray you. I don't trust anyone."
Yeah.
"Then you'll never be disappointed. It's the only way to live." And they drop out of light speed. and come up on this big cloud thing in the sky or in the space or whatever. And Lando asks L3 if she needs anything. She says equal rights.
Mm-hmm.
And there, you can see the ships flying through this cloud area, and there's beacons, light beacons, to follow the trail.
Yeah.
Supposedly, it's the only way through without getting, you know, hit by like storms or anything like that. Yeah. They say the noise that they keep hearing is planets crashing into each other.
Oh, that's cool.
Because, you know, we'll find out later, but they're right next to a big black hole, basically. Sucking everything in. And we have a little conversation between L3 and Kira about love and how that works with a droid, and Lando has feelings for her and this and that.
Yeah.
How does that work? Well, it just does.
Such a girl moment.
How would that work? And Beckett and Han start going through the details. You know, they're all talking about what they're going to do. Stick to the plan. Don't improvise. And they land on the Kessel on planet. Right, here comes the landing, and they come out and are greeted by some guards. Not much space to land because it's being mined all over the place. And Kira comes out in one of the capes. And basically has Chewie and Han tied up in restraints.
Prisoners.
And Kira says that she's from the Trade Federation and she's got some slaves for them that she wants to trade with as samples for what she's going to bring more of. And of course it's Han and Chewbacca. And one of the guards goes over and they start inspecting them, you know, checking their ears and their teeth and they're, you know, making sure they're in good shape. And they says they'll accept them and, you know, slaves are to follow so they can get clipped and tagged.
Time to go inside.
They go inside and they split up. So Kira gives him back the dice thing that you know she gave him for luck years ago. And they're getting a tour of the facility. They see a control room where they control everything. They see Han and Chewie being loaded onto a freight elevator, and
Oh yeah, Lando. Lando had the same hat or helmet on that he had on in that other movie.
Yep, that was Return of the Jedi when he was at Jabba's palace. Remember?
Yeah.
So they won't let him into the control room because, you know, they just need to negotiate separately. And we see on the monitors where Chewbacca and Han Solo fight in the elevator to get away from the people, and Chewbacca tears the arms off one of the guards. It's
the best.
And the droid's freaking out because the screen went blank. Nobody's paying attention to him. And that's when Lando distracts the men outside and shoots them all. And Kira attacks the guard that's giving trying to negotiate, kills him. And L3 says, "I've never seen anybody do that before." And she says she learned some sort of martial arts from Dryden. And they get out on the main area, you know, outside of the control room. L3 stays back to monitor and find a map of where they need to go. And she notices that one of the droids won't pay attention to her, so she takes off the restraining bolt and tells the droid he's liberated. Go away, Scoot.
You're liberated. Do what you need to do. Be free.
And she connects herself.
That dude jumped on one of the control panels. He started jumping around.
Yep.
And then I think it's the same one that let them all free. That's all the rest of them free.
Yep, he lets a few free and a couple others start letting others free, and it's kind of a chain reaction. And we see Han and Chewbacca making their way through the facility with instructions by L3, and one of the droids starts releasing prisoners, you know, people are doing the mining, and their collars starts coming off, and one of those people pushes a button that releases more people and so on, and there's chaos going on. And L3 says, "I've created a distraction." And that's where you see the droid that's walking on top of the control panel.
Yeah.
Having a good old time, breaking
that's
stuff.
It's a big old distraction.
Exactly. And Han and Chewbacca are running through the tunnels, and Chewie sees some of his family off in the distance, and leaves Han, says, "Hey, what are you going to do?" And Han's like, "Well, you know, I need your help here," but he says, "No, I got to get my family." And so Han lets him do that and gives him a weapon and runs off. And Chewie goes and has a fight with some guards to free his family. And they... Han runs off and says he lost Chewie and that he had something to do. And Beckett's shooting off people, and Han makes it to the vault, and there's one guard there, and he goes up and says some gibberish that's not correct, and he fights the guard, knocks him out, and L3 opens up the vault, and Han sees the canisters and says, "Okay, I can get one of these." So the temperature reaches below 35 standard, then the coaxium starts to get dangerous. So he unstraps one, which is he's struggling to grab, and puts it on a cart. He says, I've got it. It's secure. And Beckett says, well, you need to get 11 more of those things. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what? 11 more?
11 more? What are you talking about, Willis?
And we see Lando's back on his ship, and he's doing like a log entry. He looks like he's doing what he called the Lando Chronicles. It's funny. He's got this little thing that shows his image, but it looks like a microphone.
Yeah.
So he's doing this, and he notices a lot of commotion. And L3 is talking about a mass breakout. She's glad she took the job because she freed a bunch of... She freed all these droids. She's so glad she took the job. Yeah. They're... Han's pushing the cart, and Kira and them are escaping as well. And just as Han gets a bunch of guards come by him, Chewie shows up and takes out all the guards. And his family comes and helps push the cart.
Yeah.
And clear the path of everybody.
And get that, take it on, put the stuff on.
Eventually. And, you know, they got to push this stuff for a while to get it out. Segwa is Chewie's mate's name is what it says there. And, like, yeah, all the people are coming out and all the droids are coming out. They're all a mass escape, right? And the guards and stuff are firing at people as they're escaping, and they're dragging the coaxium stuff to the Millennium Falcon. Han starts shooting at Lando starts shooting at different guards and throws a gun at Han, and they start firing as Chewbacca and his family are loading the coaxium onto the ship. And they put the canisters inside these under the floor, basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're firing and firing, and Lando says, aim at the guns, the big guns, because they're gonna take us out. Beckett and everybody starts firing at the cannons and knocking people off the cannons, and Kira starts getting the ship ready. Quaxium's on board, and then Lando says, where's L3? He sees L3, and L3 gets shot, knocked down, and shot again, and basically disabled. And Lando runs after L3 to save her. And L3 is going through a system failure. Lando picks her up to take her off, and she falls apart in his arms, right?
Yeah.
And he gets shot also. Yeah. And Han has to run out and help him escape and get back on the ship. Chewie is told to start the ship, and his family is like, no, we've got to go. We can't stay here. Get on your ship. We don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And they say goodbye, and Chewie runs to help and get them on the ship, and basically picks up Lando and L3 in his arms and carries them onto the ship. And Kira runs out with some bombs and throws them at many of the cannons and blows them up, and there's a big explosions all over the place. And she says, what are you waiting for? Get on board. What are you waiting for? And then we see Lando holding L3, and L3 is having some troubles, and Lando tells Han to get the ship out of here. So Han gets to fly. And for some reason, he knows what switches and everything to push. And he starts it up, and they take off and leave. And Beckett gets into the cannon, or the laser cannon thing, and starts fighting off fighters and stuff. Right? Or is that later?
They're flying. Yeah.
They're flying. L3 is falling apart and dying and stops working. Shuts down.
Oh, God. For him.
L3.
In the ship.
L3!
Kimasabi.
And Lando is all sad about this and holding on to L3. And yeah, they get out back into the cloud area where they're, you know, following the beacons and stuff. And Han says he could use a co-pilot. And Chewbacca sits down behind her. Beckett checks the coaxium, of course. And they see a big Imperial freighter. I'm like, oh, that's an Imperial blockade. They must have heard about your little, rebellion on the planet there. And Han says, why would they send out TIE fighters? That's stupid. And then next thing you know, about 10 or 15 TIE fighters come their way. And that's when Beckett gets into the guns and starts firing at him. He calls it the ventral gun, which is the one underneath, I think is what that means. And he takes out quite a few of them, shoots them off, and they finally fight them all off. And they're trying to figure out how to get out of there. And they've lost some time, and the coaxium is starting to heat up. So Han suggests that they go through the Maelstrom to get out, because it's a shortcut. Mm-hmm. And Lando basically says, well, we can't do that. We don't know how to navigate through it. And that's when Han says, hey, hook up L3 to the navigational database, and she should download all of the maps and everything in there. So they're still fighting, going through there, and there's still some more TIE fighters coming after them. There's basically one or two left, and a couple pieces of debris knock out one, and one gets past Beckett, and that's where Han uses the ship to push the TIE fighter into something. While Lando's trying to get L3 plugged into the system, Beckett's taking out more. There's one left, like I said, that gets past him. And like I said, Han takes the ship and turns it and knocks the TIE fighter into the wall. And there's one more left, and Beckett shoots, and gets it. And this is where Han tells Kira to switch the shields to the rear deflector, and she doesn't know what she's doing, and Chewbacca pulls her out of the way and sits down and does it, and it's where Chewie tells Han that he's 190 years old.
Yeah.
He's like, 190 years old? Wow, you don't look it. Kira sees, goes out in the ship and sees that there's something on fire. And she picks up one of Lando's capes and starts putting it out. And he's like, wait, that's an expensive cape. Don't ruin it. Mm-hmm. No. And he Beckett doesn't destroy the last TIE fighter because it hits the cannon and knocks it out the cannon. And this is where Han's going to do some weird maneuver where he puts the landing gear down and skids on the ground. And the fighter keeps coming at him, and they get so low to the ground that the TIE fighter's low too, and it can't control itself, and it runs into obstacles and blows up and explodes. And that's when he tells Chewie to flood it, and they take off and leave.
Yeah.
And now they're out in the maelstrom, out in the dark where they can't see anything, right? And what's going on? They finally get L3 disconnected, and the coaxium's turning red. Beckett's like, "Hurry up! We don't have much time." They get L3 plugged in, and she's downloading. Interfacing. She's plotting her course. And you see lightning every once in a while. It shows some of the clouds. L3 is constructing a model of the maelstrom. Approaching the mall. Beckett's like, "That doesn't sound like something we want to be approaching." And big bolt of lightning hits them and knocks out their power, their lights and stuff. And they start playing with the circuits until they get the power back on. And they come upon a big eye. Oh my goodness! What is that thing? It's a huge thing. It's like it's got like tentacles and stuff and whatever. And Han says, "Is that the Maw?" And Lando's like, "No, that's a living creature. I don't know what that is." And it's got lightning coming off its arms and stuff. That's crazy. And then they see the black hole, and Han says it's a gravity well. Which is another name for a black hole. Towards it.
They don't know how to have the power.
Right, and Han throws an escape pod out to distract the big creature, and the creature takes the bait and gets trapped in the gravity well. As they both try to escape. And L3 found a way out. 90 degrees leftish. And Han says they're using all the power they can to not get pulled into the gravity well. And they talk about putting a drop of the unrefined coaxium into the fuel, a fusion reactor. And they're like, "Oh yeah, that'll give us enough power to probably get out of here." So we get Beckett gets into the medical kit and gets a tube and some needle and stuff like that to extract. And Han sees the escape path that L3 has mapped, and we see the gravity wells pulling stuff off of the outside of the ship, and Han gets a visual on the escape route. Beckett has extracted the stuff, and he's opening up the fusion reactor to put it in. He pulls out this little tube. And gets some sort of caulk on his fingers, keep them dry or whatever. We see the big creature behind the Millennium Falcon. It's starting to, the skin's starting to be peeled off of it on the gravity well as it's being sucked in. And the Millennium Falcon's being pulled backwards because of the gravity. And Han's like, we got a short time. And he's like, I'm going to count you down to three. One, two, three, now. And he inserts the coaxium in. And the ship takes it in, fires, and then all power stops. And they're getting, they don't have any engines. And it's, they're being pulled directly into the, to the black hole. And suddenly, the engines re-engage and they fly out at high speed. I mean, it's so fast, they, we see them streaking and, you know, pushing things or whatever. And they're headed towards this exit that they saw that's a gap there. And Han talks, says, remember when we were on the speeder and I turned it sideways? Okay. Because this time it's going to work. That's how we're going to get out. And it looks like the whatever planet or whatever is closing in on them, they're trying to escape from. And right before the exit closes, they hit the hyperspace button and pshoom, they fire out. Yeah. And then we hear them on the radio saying, hey, this is the Millennium Falcon. We need to land immediately and unload some coaxium. And you see them fly in. We're here now, now, now. Get ready, we're coming. Ah, and they circle around. You can see the ship kind of smoking a little bit, probably overheated and you know, such. And they land loosely onto the platform and start unloading the coaxium and getting it refined. Right, they have
the marauders come and reveal themselves too.
And this is where Han starts bragging about doing the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs. And Chewie's like, you're crazy, man. It was 13 or 14. And Han says, not if you round down, man. And he goes over to Lando, and they're looking at the Millennium Falcon, which is in pieces. And Lando's like, I hate you.
Yeah.
I really hate you. He's like, I'm going to be on my ship in my quarters waiting for my share. And I don't want to ever see you again. Because you treated my ship badly. And Han's like, never? And then we're, yeah, so we're on this Savine area planet or whatever, and it's a desert planet, it looks like.
Hey, you want to pause for a second and look at the time?
Yeah, I know. It's 2 hours. I know. We're almost done with the show. We got half, we got 30 minutes left, it says.
Get that.
So we're good, I think, unless it's 4 o'clock. So we see Kira and Han talking about the about Dryden. She's wetting herself down from cleaning herself off with a cloth and stuff. And she's talking about how she has to go back to Dryden Vos.
So much fun.
And they're talking about, you know, crossing Crimson Dawn. And she says he's an outlaw. She tells him he's a good guy. And he's like, I'm not a good guy. I'm far from a good guy. And we've got the coaxium refined. And they tell him to come up to the bar to, you know, get ready for their payment and stuff. And strangely enough, we see no one talking. You know, they're talking to him, and that's when Infus Ness shows up and says, "Hey, Beckett." And they're out there all, you know, standing all forceful-like. Beckett's like, "What do you want?" And this is where Han comes up there, too, and he's like, "No, I trust me, I'll take care of this." Right?
I got 30 militia on that. But you know, as soon as I get this thing on the
and he talks about how they've got 30 warriors on the ship over there. He points at the ship, and the ship takes off. And Beckett takes over and says, "Hey, you know, by the time Crimson Dawn gets here, they're going to kill us or kill you. So, there's your choices." And this is where we get the one looks like a leader, takes the mask off, and it's a girl, it's a kid. Mm-hmm. And everybody's like, "What?" And they go in and get a drink and talk about how everybody there...
That was a story.
Yeah, it tells a story, and everybody there was, you know, attacked by Crimson Dawn for their resources, and they disobeyed, and all their tongues were cut out. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And she says, tell us who did this, and the one lady draws a symbol of Crimson Dawn. And they talk about how their worlds are brutalized by the syndicates. And I don't know if you noticed, but the one guy's a little midget guy. Mm-hmm. That's the guy who played in R2-D2, and he played in that Willow show that's coming up. He's one of the Marauders. And they talk about she talks about how she needs the coaxium because it'll fuel a rebellion. And Han's like, "Oh, we got to give the money. We got to give it to him." And he tries to talk Beckett into it. He says, "I've got a plan. Trust me." And you know, Dryden's like, he's got a army full of enforcers and so on, and I've got this plan, just listen to me. And we don't really hear the plan at this point. We don't know if, you know, anything that is going to happen later is part of that plan. Kira tells the Infus Ness lady that Han's going to help her, and Beckett's like, "There's a lot of ways this can go south." And they decide to
pop up on the hill. And
yep.
That decides to go his own way, supposedly.
Yep. That's where they basically part ways. And Beckett's like, "I'm going to do my thing and you can do your thing. But I'm not going to be a part of this. I'm getting out while I can."
If you're looking for work, come to Tatooine.
Yeah, he does say that. He says, "If you're looking for work, come to Tatooine. I know a guy who's got a big operation that we can make enough money to retire on." Big shot gangster putting a crew together. And we know that, you know, the only gangster really on Tatooine is Jabba, right?
Yeah.
So the ship shows up, you know, the Crimson Dawn ship with Dryden Vos on it. And the coaxium's refined, so they take the coaxium crates, looks like, over to the ship. And, you know, of course, they got to declare their guns again. Nobody else has any weapons, just Kira. And they ride the elevator up. And they meet with Dryden, and Dryden's like, okay, you finally came through for me. Where's Beckett? Oh, Beckett didn't make it. That's too bad. And Dryden asks for details, and they talk about how they took a bad turn on Kessel, and he has some coalfish or whatever, coalfish, and it looks like it's just fish eggs, right? Except they're yellow and red and stuff. And he tells Kira to come over and sit by him, and he wants to see the coaxium because he doesn't believe it's the real stuff.
Opens up the container like we said, right there.
Yeah, show me what you brought me, and he opens it up, and one of the lids looks like it has a gun on it.
Can't see that.
Yeah, we see it, but Dryden doesn't see it. We see it right there when he takes the lid off, but Dryden doesn't see the gun. And he pulls out the coaxium. It's in a bunch of containers. He pulls out he asks for a vial. And Han is like, hey, this stuff's dangerous. I don't know if that's a good idea for you to be playing around with it. And this is where Dryden says, I don't ask for something more than once. And it's a sleeve. It's got like, 8 or so vials in it.
Yep.
He's looking at it. 8 or 10, maybe 12. Looks like 12. And Dryden's like, hey, this stuff looks exactly like the real stuff.
Why would you say that?
And he says, but my associate told me that you're bringing me the fake stuff. This isn't the real coaxium. You gave it to Infus Nest instead. And he says, I don't know what Kira told you. And he says, no, not Kira. Not Kira. Kira, no, she wouldn't. My other associate. And he says, can you come in?
Yeah.
And it's Beckett again. Dun, dun, dun.
I'm sorry, kid. I do what you got to do. Survive. I told you that.
Yep. Don't trust anybody.
Hey, you might want to check under that lid.
Check under that lid. Keep your paws away from there. And we see a bunch of guards go to apprehend the Infus Nest people and get the crates of coaxium from them. And, they're still going through the stuff, and Dryden starts scolding at Kira for not being loyal to him. And he's like, giving her the look and, I'm mad at you. I'm going to kill you kind of thing. And there. He asks her what she would do if someone did the same to her. And she says, I would ask them to make a sacrifice of something they loved. And Beckett's like, I tried to warn you about her. She's not trustworthy. And Han says, I was paying attention to you. You told people are predictable, and you're no exception. And then we get the reveal that the guards find the crates with no coaxium in them. And he says, Eamon, talk to me. Stuff? Yeah. And then we see the actual Infus Nest people come down and attack the guards and stuff. and knock them all out. This little girl's got her foot on top of somebody. Oh, I got it. I hope you didn't send all your fancy enforcers.
That's all you had down. That's all you had up here.
Beckett's like, what's going on? And Han tells him, like you said, that this is the real coaxium. And Beckett starts firing at the other guards on the ship and says, give me that vial of coaxium. Put it in the crate and let's go. I'm taking the Wookiee with me.
Come on, Chewbacca. You're coming with me.
And he leaves them to themselves as they all start fighting and shooting. And Dryden grabs the knives with the lasers on them. And pew, pew. And they do some fighting and shooting and
Derek gets a sword.
Han knocks one of the, or he knocks the blaster out of Han's hands and is throws one at him, and he gets the blaster back eventually. And Kira picks up a sword of some sort. And Kira comes up and blocks Han from shooting Dryden. And points a sword at him and says, I'm sorry. Basically showing her loyalty to Dryden. And Dryden's like, once you're a part of Crimson Dawn, you can't leave. She talks about finding her opponent's weakness, and she says, I'm your weakness today. And she throws a sword at Dryden, and they have a little battle, and one of his knives gets stuck in the sword, and she throws the sword around and stabs him with it and kills him. And she tells Han that she had to. And Han's like, you're free now. And she's like, no, I'm not. But we can take these jewels and buy whatever ship you want. And they kiss and get all lovey-dovey. You've got to go help Chewbacca. He needs your help.
So
he leaves. She tells him to smile. And she says, that's the word that I use to make to remember you by is smile. And he exits the area. She goes and grabs the ring off of Dryden's finger and puts it on her finger. Eventually. And we see Beckett walking off with Chewbacca, and she goes over to a console and inserts the ring and twists it. And the ship locks down, and we see an image of Maul appear on the screen. And she tells Maul that Dryden was killed, murdered by some thieves. And this is where we see Maul asking about the shipment, and it was stolen, and Beckett stole it. And she talks about how she could have saved Dryden and all that. And then we see Maul uses the Force to pull his lightsaber to his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And he he tells her that they have lots of things to accomplish and that hopes and she's going to be a part of it. And he lights up his lightsaber. And you and I are going to be working much closer together now. And he goes off the screen. So now she's the boss. She's the Dryden. And again, Chewie and Beckett are walking around, and Chewie sees Han just before Beckett does, and he's got a gun pointed towards Beckett. Mm-hmm.
Beckett starts his long ass speech that we've heard before.
Yep.
Han goes,
it's never about you, she's a survivor. And you shouldn't trust people, and you shouldn't trust me. And just before Beckett pulls up his gun, Han shoots him, just like you said. And he falls down, and Han runs over to him and says, I'm sorry. He says, that was a smart move, kid. For once, you were planning ahead. I would have killed you. And Beckett dies right there. Ugh. And they...
Kira takes a ship.
You see Kira taking a ship off, yeah. She starts to fly off, and she flies next to him, and she's looking out the window, and he's watching from the ground. You know, of course, they don't know they can see each other, but, you know, hey, how you doing? Yeah. Why are you leaving me? Oh, I thought we were going to go buy a ship together. I guess not. And him and Chewbacca grab the coaxium and they take it to the Infest Nest people. Right?
Yep. Him and then Chewbacca, they give them 1-2. Now they're back there. At 1-2, they did it again.
Yeah, they strap it in, and there's a big old speech that the girl gives about the rebellion, and that they'll be able to use it much more to fight off the Empire and Imperials and blah, blah, blah. We're all warriors, you know, come on. And she offers for him to join, and he says no. And that's when she gives him a vial of coaxium to keep. And he hands it to Chewie and says, don't lose that.
Okay.
Okay, dummy. And they leave. The next scene, we see Lando playing cards again. Mm-hmm. And it's like in the middle of some forest or whatever. And Han walks up. And Lando's surprised to see him. Chewie yells at him and threatens him. Arr! That's where Han sees the trick card thing on his sleeve. Mm-hmm. And he talks about Chewie ripping his arms off. And they show Lando the vial of coaxium that they got out with. Which is weird because, you know, the beginning of the movie, there's a vial, and at the end of the movie, there's a vial.
Yeah.
So they end up playing cards. And, you know, this is the point where Orlando says he's gonna take all his money again. And Han shows his cards to Chewie, and Chewie's like, oh, you got a sucky hand. And he decides to put it all in. And Lando's like, whoa, not again.
Whoa, yes again.
And Lando's trying to get his cheat card out. Chink, chink. It's not coming. Chink, chink.
There.
And Han's like, you got everything you need there, pal? Got what you want? And Lando is forced to put his hand down, which is a good hand.
Yeah.
But and Han says, if only you'd had this little green Psylop, you could have beat my straight. He shows Lando the card that he had in his little trigger thingy. And then we see the next scene where Han and Chewie are flying the Millennium Falcon. It's been repaired and everything. It's all nice and pretty looking again. When have I ever steered you wrong? And they take off into hyperspace. We see the little dice floating on the thing, and the show ends. We see Ron Howard, director, and that's it. Credits roll. Yay, finally done. That was a long one, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, that brings up the question of the week. I put the question of the week as, will Kira appear again, maybe in the Ahsoka series? Because I think she will. She's still alive during that time. It's after Return of the Jedi. And canon tells us that Kira takes over after Obi-Wan Kenobi kills Darth Maul. There's several books that are canon that talk about Crimson Dawn. It's actually a series of books. I think there's like six or so books about Crimson Dawn and Kira, and you know how she sees Palpatine as a threat because Palpatine's blocking their access to certain things that they want. So she starts to go after Palpatine in the books and stuff. But anyway, so that's why I put that in there, because I think she'll probably appear at some point.
Yeah.
What do you think about the movie? That's a pretty good movie. I think it's...
Yeah.
I think, like we said before, it's not the greatest movie, a Star Wars movie. I think it got a lot of bad rap and stuff, but I think it's a pretty good one. It's not the best one, but it's up there, I think. So.
Yeah. It shows some explanation about Han and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the backstory is pretty good and what we hear and stuff. So I'm going to push this button real quick.
Feedback at kylejohansen.us. That's feedback, kylejohansen.us.
Yeah, so you heard that email address. We want you to answer the question of the week. You know, give us all your comments, whatever you have on your mind about this solo episode that we did. You know, did we get something wrong? Did we get it all right? Do you have, opinions about Kira and Han Solo and Lando? Just tell us all of that stuff, right, Scott? We want to hear everything. And he went dark. Must have had to reconnect. So, with that, I'm going to play the outro. What do you think, Scott? Should we go out? Yeah, let's go out.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Alliance Briefing Room podcast. Please visit our website where you can play current and past episodes. That's https://rabr.kylejohansen.us. That's rabr.kylejohansen.us. On the left-hand side is a navigation menu. You can use this to learn how to load the Rebel Alliance Briefing Room podcast on your Android or Apple phone and tablet. And we have direct links to our podcast on Apple and Google Podcasts. Please participate by connecting to our social media, answering questions of the week, or submitting feedback directly from the site. Again, all of these are available at the Rebel Alliance Patreon website at rabr.kailejohansen.us. This podcast in no way is approved, sponsored, or owned by Lucasfilms Ltd., Disney, Disney Plus, or any of its subsidiaries. All opinions are solely owned by Kyle and or Scott, and in no way express the views or opinions of their past or present employers. Views and opinions are not supported or restricted by Lucasfilms Ltd., Disney, Disney Plus, or any of its subsidiaries. Any rebroadcast, reproduction, or any or other use of this podcast and its affiliate sites without consent of Super Duper Podcast Network and its host is prohibited. Prohibited. I am Kyle John Hanson, and this is Andrew Scott's son. Say goodbye now.
Doggy. Bye now. Goodbye, doggy.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Stop.